Welcome to episode 19 of While I Breathe, the official podcast of the ACLU of South Carolina. I'm your host, Jace Woodrum.
And I'm your other host, Paul Bowers. So Jace, it's the new year and we're back in the State House again. I know you've already gone in to give testimony, speak to lawmakers a couple of times, and it's just January. What are your first impressions from the start of the new year?
This session has hit hard and fast. We are just days in, and there have already been hearings on, to be honest, some really bad ideas. And most of the ideas that are being brought up in these hearings and prioritized, I want to be clear, are not what South Carolinians tell pollsters or us what they're thinking about. Most South Carolinians are frustrated at the cost of groceries or at traffic or potholes or whatever. They have all these concerns, and what lawmakers are choosing to spend their time on are attacking civil rights and civil liberties, transgender kids to access to abortion care to voting access. We have already seen some true threats come up, be voted on, and they're moving through very, very quickly. So it's more important than I think even in recent years that folks plug in and get engaged, or you're going to blink and miss the entire session because it's going so fast.
Yeah, just in the first 2 weeks, the agendas in these subcommittee meetings have included attacks on voting rights, trans rights, especially for students, reproductive rights. I think it speaks volumes what they choose to put on the agenda right out the gate. And it's just been relentless. And it has almost nothing to do with the priorities of normal people in South Carolina. The people, you see them bring in folks to testify in favor of these bills, and they're from the Alliance Defending Freedom. They have a spokesman from the Moms for Liberty. These are not the top of mind issues for my neighbors or my family when I talk to them about it. But that's what's going on in the State House. So I'm glad you're still going in there. It's not an easy place to go into, but we got to keep showing up.
Yeah, we really do. And one of the reasons we show up is to show our lawmakers that they cannot attack us in silence. They cannot attack us in darkness. We will be there watching, and we will be there speaking up. We won't be silent, and we won't be absent. And that is critically important. Even when things don't go our way, being there is important.
Well, joining us on the podcast today to talk about ways that we can show up this year is our brilliant colleague, Courtney Thomas. She's our advocacy director here at the ACLU of South Carolina. I really appreciate talking to her about these things because she has a finger on the pulse of just about everything going on in the State House and has really practical ideas about what it means to show up and what's actually effective. So we're going to get into it with Courtney. So without further ado, here we go. With me today is my colleague, the brilliant Courtney Thomas. How are you, Courtney?
I'm all right, Paul. I'm making it.
Good. I wanted to check in with you because as we're recording, we just finished the first week of State House action in South Carolina. It is the second part of a 2-year session, but it's the start of a new year. And it sounds like you hit the ground running. So how are we feeling? What was your first week of the year in the State House like?
Yeah, hit the ground running. Sprinting is a very apt metaphor because the first day was actually really great for me because I got the opportunity to hang out with some community organizers from all around the state at an event that was hosted by Be The Ones. It's become an annual tradition where a lot of folks from around the state get together and take a photo on the steps. And in that photo, there are signs that say our house. And I think that's a really good reminder for all of us that no matter how difficult the next few months are going to be, no matter how tired we are, that this is our house. And I think with that ownership comes like responsibility, but also a lot of power too. So one of my little signs in my home is come in, but don't act up. Letting people know how you want to be treated in your house. So I think that's a pretty apt kind of description there.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good reminder that it is our house. It's like this very imposing building. It's beautiful inside, but it's intimidating. You know, you got to walk through a metal detector. You're there to talk to people in suits who are not always super friendly. But it is our house and a place for democracy to happen ostensibly. So we got to make that happen sometimes. I had one day in the state house this week and it was exhausting. Like I don't know how you do it some weeks. It's really draining. But one thing I took away from it was that you just meet all kinds of people. And I'm a yapper. I just talk to people when I'm in line. And I ended up talking to one gentleman from the Convention of States movement who went to call a new constitutional convention and rewrite the Constitution. I talked to some people from the York County Republican Party who had come down in a charter bus. One of them asked me why we don't stand up for the free speech rights of conservatives. And I told her we absolutely do. You meet all kinds of people in there, and it's important to show up when you can and use your voice. On that note, I wanted to ask a question that I think about a lot. You know, I'm relatively new to showing up at state houses and school board meetings and so on and speaking to elected officials. And honestly, sometimes it feels a little fruitless, or it can feel like I'm just talking to a wall. And I don't think I'm alone in that, right? I mean, I talk to people all the time who are weighing whether it's worth their time to go to Columbia, you know, get up early, figure out childcare, take the day off work, and spend a whole day there to speak to these lawmakers. My question for you is, why should I show up to speak to lawmakers? What good does it do?
Yeah, I first want to start by validating that feeling, because it does often feel fruitless. It does often feel frustrating, even sometimes. I have felt that myself, and this is the job that I've chosen. And for people who are, you know, just going about their lives and they get some action alert from the ACLU that says, come out and testify, it can probably feel even worse than that sometimes, because we keep talking about the same issues over and over and over again. While there's that feeling, a little bit more of that responsibility of this being our house, part of the legislative process is to hear public input. So we have every much of a right and a responsibility to be a part of the process as the people that we elected. And it's also important to remember that the audience isn't just the people who are sitting in that hearing room. It's not just the people who came to speak. It's not just the decision makers. It's also the people outside of the room, the news media, but also for history. I know it might sound kind of trite to say we are being watched by history. That is not the Hamilton quote, but I think it's important for people to remember that even in trying times like we are in right now, people resisted, people fought, people spoke up, because we're in a long-term battle. We're in a long-term fight. So the hour, 2 hours that you might be, that you might have in a hearing where you feel that frustration, we are part of a much longer, decades long even, fight for civil rights and civil liberties. So I think whenever possible, if you're able to come out to the state house, even if it's not to testify, but to be a part of the process, I think is still very important.
Yeah. It's still the room where it happens. That is a Hamilton quote.
There we go.
Yeah. It's a good reminder. I think one theme of this podcast and a theme of our work is that you have to keep fighting back despair. Difficult times, but you can't throw your hands up.
You don't always have to go to the state house to testify. It can be for a rally or a demonstration, or even just to be in community with other people. we need testifiers, but we also need community care folks. So if you have the ability to just be a listening ear or to be a supporter, you can wear your sticker in the room and never say a word, but still make an impact.
Absolutely. Well, on that note, let's talk about some of the things that happened just in this first week of the year. There was a flurry of bills that all came up for a debate in subcommittees. And just to give people a quick look at the legislative process, usually your chance to speak on a bill is during a subcommittee hearing. So not even the full committee, there'll be like a subcommittee with a smaller group of lawmakers, and they let anybody from the general public come in and speak. One of their priorities this year, and I do want to say these are indicative of priorities. You know, it's week one. These are the bills that they decide to take up. So one of the very first bills of 2026 to come up for debate was a bathroom ban, a type of bill that we've seen come and go over and over again for at least a decade now in South Carolina. This is House Bill 4756. It's a bill that would force transgender students to use restrooms, locker rooms, and dormitories that don't match their gender. And this one applies both to K-12 schools and higher education. What can you tell us about that one and what happened with that bill this week?
Yeah, I was actually standing in line for another bill that we'll talk about later on. But I was able to see at the very least that there were so many people in line to testify for this bill. One of the biggest hearing rooms in the House office building was filled. The overflow room was filled. So I think there's a lot of attention on this. And I saw some really interesting things in this hearing. I was looking back at some of the recorded footage, and side note, you can look back and see what was said in these hearings if you go to the State House website. But there were some people who used that opportunity to take a stand in support of trans kids and also say that this bill has a very real likelihood of targeting cisgender girls as well. So the bill that purports to, you know, quote unquote, protect young girls can also harm them. So I think there's a really interesting rhetorical game being played here. There were some folks who showed up with their visual language of, you know, pink and we are the cisgender women. I don't think they would call themselves cisgender women, but we are the women and we stand up for girls. And as a woman myself, I found that to be partially annoying and also just frustrating because I'm a woman and I also recognize the rights and the dignity of trans people. So I don't like the idea that only one faction of women are being heard at our state house.
Yeah, it's important to show up for our trans neighbors, but also, yeah, I mean, our colleague Michaela was one of the speakers who pointed out that when we start allowing the state to police gender, transgender people certainly are targeted, but so are cisgender people. Play Michaela's testimony because she knocked it out of the park.
My name is Michaela Mangle. I'm here as a private citizen in opposition to Bill 4756. This bill does not protect students in public schools and universities in South Carolina. Instead, this bill will increase harassment against any student in South Carolina public school system who does not fit neatly into gender stereotypes. I am a cisgender woman. I was a student athlete my entire high school career. I played volleyball at Hillcrest High School in Simpsonville, where I won 3 state championships. So I have spent a lot of time in locker rooms and public schools in South Carolina. And I can assure you that transgender women using the women's locker room was never even a thought or concern among me or my teammates. Rather, our concern was on the lack of funding girls' sports received compared to our male counterparts. Not only will House Bill 4756 create more harassment for transgender people simply trying to use the restroom, but this bill will also harm the cisgender girls you claim you want to protect. Some cisgender female athletes do not fit the stereotypical feminine physique. Many are more muscular than the average woman, and some are simply more masculine presenting. These are the girls who will be targeted by this bill. This anti-trans rhetoric creates an unsafe space for all women, whether they are transgender or not. We saw in the 2024 Olympic Games when Algerian boxer Iman Khalif was accused of being transgender after winning a gold medal. Khalif is not transgender. However, this is what happens when bills with this type of rhetoric get passed. Women whose muscles are seen as being a little too big, whose skin is typically viewed as a little too dark, and who are just a little too good at their sport are harassed and ridiculed. It suddenly becomes okay for strangers to question a woman's identity and force her to prove that she is woman enough to be allowed in certain spaces. This is humiliating for young girls and women and will only increase unrealistic body expectations for students of all gender identities, leading to an increase in eating disorders and body dysmorphia. This bill is unsafe and unnecessary. If you care about the privacy and safety of students in South Carolina schools, I urge you to reject this bill. Thank you.
Couldn't say it better than Michaela. So we're going to keep showing up on this bill because it matters for everybody. There were also two anti-abortion bills that came up for debate. And I think, you know, people who pay attention to the State House probably remember in October, there was a really egregious anti-abortion bill. That was Senate Bill 323. It was a total abortion ban. And it was one of those five-alarm fires where hundreds of people came out to speak. And effectively, they stopped it. I mean, even anti-abortion groups came out to say, this is too extreme. We don't want to, you know, try people for homicide after they get an abortion. But no victory is permanent, and we're still seeing bills advance that have bits and pieces of 323, even into this year. So one of those that will sound familiar is a bill that would equate abortion to homicide. The language is that abortion would be a crime equivalent to homicide of a person who had been born alive. So we're talking here about House Bill 3537. What are your thoughts on that one, Courtney?
This one is so dangerous, so harmful. Thankfully, this bill was not able to be voted on in subcommittee. They had to gavel out because the House was going into session. But bills like this that have that born alive language, they all come from the same place. They all come from anti-abortion groups who have copied and pasted this language from other states around the country. And what's really concerning about these bills is, yes, of course, the harsh penalties for pregnant and birthing people, and also some of the language that it could codify into law. So look for things like personhood, born alive, unborn children, things like that. They really are like red flags and signals about what the actual motives are for these groups and these bills.
Yeah. Preborn human, I think, is another one that we're seeing a lot. That, yeah, they copy and paste a lot. They're not coming up with these bills themselves. Another bill that came up for debate the same day was House Bill 4760. This was a bill targeting medication abortion. So it would criminalize possession and use of mifepristone and, you know, I read words more than I hear them. Is it how do you say misoprostol?
I've heard it several ways. I say misoprostol, but I could also be wrong.
That sounds better.
Also, our legislators, the people who are making the laws about these bills, do not know how to say it either. So I don't feel as bad, but I'm also just like,
that's a relief.
Come on,
a
y'all. Yeah. It's a little embarrassing too, to be honest with you. Like, come on, guys.
But we know what these drugs are, yeah, though. I mean, they're used for medication abortion and other things, mm-hmm, too, right? Like they're used for managing miscarriages. They are used in cases of pregnancy complications and other conditions, including like Cushing's syndrome. These are medications that have a broader range of use. What's going on with that bill? Anything to watch out for, and what's going to happen with this bill next?
Yeah, unfortunately, that bill received a favorable report from the subcommittee. So that basically means that the subcommittee signed off and said, yes, this bill is worthy of continuing along the legislative process. So when we say something died in committee, that means it did not receive a favorable report or it didn't get a hearing at all. So this bill will move forward in the process. It received a vote of 3-2. So three Republicans voted in favor of the bill, two Democrats voted against it. So it is a pretty dangerous bill that I think is one of those like quiet, like sleeper bills. You know, it doesn't outright say we are banning abortion, because technically under this bill, you might still be able to receive medication abortion with a valid prescription. But the actual impact of this bill is a delay that can often cost people their lives. So a bill like this passed in Louisiana in 2024. And in the year since then, they've been collecting stories of doctors and pharmacists and patients who say that, you know, it might take even 10 or 15 minutes to receive this medication in the operating room when I have a patient on the table who needs it right now. So that's a moment when even seconds are important, and barriers like this really impede people's access.
Yeah, I mean, that's a common theme with a lot of anti-abortion laws, including the ones we have on the books already. You know, under the 6-week abortion ban, I've met people who went to the doctor and had pregnancy complications or had complications that meant that they couldn't deliver their child. And in that moment, when the parent's life is in danger and when tensions are running high and doctors need to act quickly, it can be like there's another presence in the room. It's not just the patient and the doctor. There is also, in the middle of all that, the state. And it's ominous, it's creepy, and it's dangerous. And we are just ratcheting that up as a state if we pass bills like this. There is another bill that was supposed to come up in the first week, got postponed, but we're certainly tracking it. And it is part of a broader theme. We see that some of our lawmakers really don't like it when people vote. Like if they could kind of skip that, some of them probably would, you know. So to lay a little groundwork here. We have a state where partisan gerrymandering is just running rampant. They're open about it. I think most famously our congressional districts are gerrymandered in a really lopsided way, in a very obvious way. Gerrymandering means politicians choosing their voters rather than the other way around. They redraw the maps for maximum advantage, in this case, often for their party. So the majority party here, the Republicans, have drawn maps in ways that make it a lot easier for incumbents to stay in power, and they make most general elections almost decided in advance. I mean, the effect is that, especially in state house and state senate races, the election that matters is the primary. You know, if a district is drawn to favor Democrats, you got to vote in the Democratic primary. If the district is drawn to favor Republicans, you got to vote in the Republican primary. So, all that being said, there is a bill in the State House this year, House Bill 3310. This would require all voters to register with a political party in order to vote in primary elections. There's some language in there about independent or unaffiliated voters, but basically a political party would get to decide if they want to open their primary to those voters. They could choose to lock them out. What do you think here? What are your concerns about a bill like that in a state like this?
I think it is actually one of the most dangerous bills that we've even talked about. I know it doesn't seem that way, but this would further entrench the stranglehold that one party has on the state. Right now, we're in a Republican supermajority. So if this bill were to pass, and many others like it were to pass, it would mean that there is single party rule in this state. Because if you want to have your vote count or your voice be heard, it says you must fall in line and you must affiliate with a particular party. You know, the First Amendment allows for freedom of association. And also, I mean, this is, if the gerrymandering part of it all wasn't so clear, this is very clear that they are trying to stack the deck in their favor, which is so interesting to me when you've already kind of won. So what is this really about? That's a question I've had myself. And I think there's a really interesting thread running through this session, but also in the last couple of years, about some of the factions that pop up even inside the political parties themselves. So this must be some consequence of that.
Yeah, I'm still learning some of those factions, but yeah, it's more than just the two parties here. We have here the state affiliate of the Freedom Caucus Network, who don't always get along with the Republican Party in general. We have something called the Family Caucus. There are all these little caucuses, and sometimes they have these shades of difference and different versions of cruelty that don't always allow them to get along. So something to watch for sure. So that's all just sort of a review of week one. There's even more going on, but these were just some of the bills that you and your team and our team were keeping an eye on. Gonna be a year. What else is on the agenda this year? I wanted to look at some other trends or some areas where we need to keep an eye out for bills coming down the line. On immigrants' rights, I think, you know, people are watching the news. Certainly at the national level, the authoritarianism of ICE and the violence of that agency are probably one of the most important national stories right now. At the state level, what are we seeing happen? Are there bills or are there movements to change immigrants' rights in our state?
There's H-4764. It is a bill that would require all law enforcement agencies who operate correctional facilities to sign a 287G agreement. So a 287G agreement is essentially an operating agreement between local law enforcement and the federal government, or ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. There are three different levels of this agreement, and some of these levels of agreement actually deputize local law enforcement to be ICE agents themselves. So this is a pretty far-reaching bill, especially for the state that at one point prioritized local control. And when I say at one point, the Civil War, that was the point. that's when they really wanted that local control. Anyway, this bill is really, it's got a lot of momentum behind it because of the moment that we're in, but also looking at that sponsor list, almost every Republican is signed on to sponsor this bill in the House. So this is something that we're definitely watching and really concerned about. And I think people should be calling their lawmakers to say, this is not what we want. We've seen the horror, we've seen the violence, even in our state, let alone Minnesota. We do not want ICE to be in our communities.
Yeah. If there's one way to appeal to politicians, maybe it's just the unpopularity. I mean, ICE has an approval rating that's right around the same level as the IRS right now. I mean, it's grim out there. People see what they do, right? And it's, why would we invite that into our communities? It doesn't keep us safe. It sows chaos. By the way, we've mentioned this several times on the podcast, but we do have a page where you can check your local law enforcement agencies to see if they've already signed one of these collaboration agreements. So aclusc.org/287G. There's a map there and there's a searchable list, and you might be surprised. I meet people sometimes who don't know, and I say, yeah, just check the map, and they find out, oh, my local sheriff already signed this thing. Even some small towns, there's a town called Coward, South Carolina, whose police department signed a task force model agreement, a tiny town. You never really know here. So,
which is the highest level of the agreement. What are y'all doing?
Right. Anyway. Towns that might have one or two officers, and they are diverting some of their time to do federal immigration enforcement. So these are the priorities here. There's another one that we're keeping an eye on, another bill. This is House Bill 4686. This one involves driver's licenses. What do we know about that one?
So this bill would revoke driver's licenses for people who can't demonstrate proficiency in English. And it's another one of those sneaky bills that on its face might not seem objectionable to some people, but it really is targeting immigrants. And this bill would really make it difficult for people who do not have English proficiency to exist in our society. So if you don't have a driver's license, it's very hard to get to work. It's very hard to go to the grocery store. It's very hard to provide for your family. So this is one of many ways that anti-immigrant sentiment is showing up in our policy.
Makes it harder to vote too under voter ID laws. I know there are other acceptable forms of ID, but if you've been using your driver's license for that and you lose it, a lot of people just aren't going to vote. Yeah, that's a really ominous one to me. In a society where we don't have public transit, the ability to drive is often the ability to get to work. You know, it's really damaging. And one of the more plainly racist bills we're looking at this year. Juvenile justice. This is a topic we look at. Sometimes we could call it children's rights. I think sometimes there may be better ways we could put this, but what has the conversation been around children, behavior, crime, and punishment in our state? What have you been seeing?
I've been seeing a lot of pretty dark language from people who claim to be standing up for children in all other arenas. It seems like the issue of juvenile crime is something that they are focused on when the data doesn't really show that there's been any significant spike in juvenile crime. So what they're doing feels like imposing the force of law enforcement and incarceration on children. Let's not forget they are children, in a way that just does not make sense for children developmentally, or even for the circumstances that these kids might be in. So there are likely going to be some more bills filed in the next few weeks that directly address this issue. We can all recognize that gun violence is a serious problem in our community. And also, we need to make sure that we are treating children like children. So I think it is important to understand that the purpose of working with children in the justice system is supposed to be rehabilitative and not just to incarcerate them.
Yeah. In the mission statement of the Department of Juvenile Justice, it specifically says rehabilitation. You know, this is not meant to be just prison for kids. It's not meant to be strictly punishment. You know, this is supposed to be a place where children can get better. And we're failing at that sometimes as a state. Housing justice. Let's talk about one good bill.
Yes.
Right. There people introduce good ideas every year, and I feel like sometimes we give them short shrift because we have to play a lot of defense. Mm-hmm. But there are good ideas out there actually. So, House Bill 4270. This is a bill about sealing eviction records. What can you tell me about that?
This one is really exciting because it has bipartisan support, and it is a bill, I like to think of it as a second chance bill, because once someone gets an eviction on their record, even if the eviction was never followed through, so if they never vacated the premises, it can make it very difficult for them to get housing at some point later on in their lives. So the records that landlords are able to access about evictions on a person's record, it doesn't really say what the circumstances were. So we don't know if this person was fleeing domestic violence. We don't know if it was a mistaken or false eviction. Mm-hmm. But this bill would give people the opportunity to have an eviction removed from their record after 5 years. It could be automatically removed. Now, the details of this bill, it's currently being negotiated. So I'm really excited to see this democratic process work out, because there are a lot of people at the table who are really working to solve this issue, because whether you are a landlord or a tenant or, you know, a realtor, you realize that this is a major issue because South Carolina has a disproportionate number of evictions relative to our population mm-hmm. size. So I think everyone has a stake in this.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, if you look at where the eviction hotspots are, people typically think of this as an urban issue, that, you know, the eviction crisis is in the cities, but yeah, rural counties are especially hit hard. I think everywhere you go in our state, rent is too high and it is very easy for landlords to evict people. And so yeah, a lot of people have an actual eviction, or as you say, just the filing of an eviction on their record. And currently that follows them for life. You know, we had an intern here a couple of years ago who told this story on the podcast about how, you know, he had an eviction filed against him while he was in college, fought the eviction and actually didn't get evicted. But the mere filing of it, you know, the act of his landlord going to court and filing it and then slapping the notice on his door is still on his record. It still makes it really difficult for him to rent an apartment anywhere in the state. And it's absurd. We can actually do something about that. So if you want to talk to your lawmaker, look them up. SCstatehouse.gov. There's a Find Your Legislator tool. If you want to give them a good idea they can take credit for, nudge them about House Bill 4270, you know, let them take some of the glory for making a good thing happen in our state, please.
And if you are looking for ways to get involved on this bill and really anything that is impacting housed and unhoused folks, check out SC Tenant Union. It's a really interesting grassroots organizing tenant union here in our state, and they're doing some really exciting things.
Yeah, good people, near and dear to my heart. You know, they started around here in the Charleston area, and these are an exciting group of people, brilliant people doing good work. So check them out for sure. Students' rights is another sort of hot topic in our state. You know, over the past few years, we've seen a book banning law passed for schools. We've seen a lot of new restrictions on what teachers can say and what students can do. We saw the state superintendent effectively end advanced placement African-American studies classes. It's not easy growing up. It's not easy going to school, and the state makes it harder sometimes. So there's a bill that's on our radar this year. This is House Bill 4757. It would require teachers to self-censor in some cases. So it's based on the individual beliefs of parents who, whether because of their beliefs about sexuality, religion, or the broadest category they give, morality, can object to an assignment in class, or really anything, and they can look through the curriculum and nix parts of what's coming in the class and tell the teacher, "You cannot teach this to my kid." It would also restrict discussions of what it calls gender roles or stereotypes. It doesn't ban them outright, but if a teacher wants to discuss those topics at all in class, they have to give parents 5 days advance notice. If there's a unit coming up on Marie Curie, if you want to mention that she faced some sexism as a scientist, you got to give 5 days notice to the parents so they can object. This is where we are. This is one of those really absurd bills, but one that is serious and has a good number of sponsors on it. Yeah, I don't know. What's the landscape like this year for students' rights and teachers' rights in South Carolina?
This one is really absurd. And there is a lot of pressure from the Republican supermajority for this bill and a similar Senate bill. I think there's so much here. The simplest metaphor, like if I go in for an oil change, I'm not going back there and telling the mechanic, "Hey, ma'am, you're doing that wrong." Like, so I can't yeah. conceive of the notion of going into a teacher's classroom and telling them, the person who has gotten a degree, a person who has been certified to do this job, that they're doing it incorrectly or that I need to be giving them notes. Like, that is the furthest thing from my mind. I mean, this is just... Right. It's absurd. And also, it really serves, it does quite a few things: censorship, surveillance. And I can't imagine trying to do my job or any job feeling like there is always someone watching, feeling like there is always someone waiting on me to slip up. And I think that is, it's got to be a really scary thing for teachers. Like, we already have a teacher shortage here in this state, and bills like this really only make our quality of education worse.
Yeah, I'm a dad, and I really resent things like this being done in my name. You know, this bill, in the bill title says something about what they're calling parental rights. Don't do this for me. Please, please. Like, can we please talk more about teachers' rights and students' rights? All students' rights. So many times they, in the state house, will pit the rights of one group of people against another, and they'll make it out as if the rights of parents are opposed to the rights of teachers, or that they're somehow mutually exclusive. And gosh, when I think about the teachers who have done incredible work for my kids in public schools, I just want their lives to be a little easier. You know, I don't want them to be surveilled. I don't want this added mountain of paperwork and surveillance, because you're right. I mean, another part of this bill would require schools to publish all of their curricula online. The reason for that is that there are national groups like Moms for Liberty that will comb through those line by line and seek parts to veto. That's what this is. That's why they put things like this in the law. And that doesn't help me as a parent. That doesn't help our teachers. That's dystopian. And that's where this bill is headed.
And I just want to pause really quickly on the Moms for Liberty piece, because this is, like I said earlier, policymaking is a very long timeline. So looking back, even just to around the early COVID years, if you remember, going to a school board meeting could have been a little dangerous in those times. So there were teachers and librarians and school administrators who were actually fearful for their lives because of the increased scrutiny that groups like Moms for Liberty pointed at them. So this bill feels like it's a continuation of that. And it really does make, I think, one of the greatest professions dangerous for teachers. Like, that doesn't make any sense. So I think we should just trust professionals to do their jobs. That should not be a revolutionary thing, but here we are.
Yeah, here we are. Anything else? I mean, any other things I'm not thinking of? Any trends to watch out for in the State House this year, Courtney?
I think we're going to see some more conversation around school vouchers and some of the continuation of that from the first part of this session. I think they're going to be looking at the cost of this program that they've instituted.
Yeah. Which we warned them about.
We did.
Many times.
You know, it never feels good to say, I told you so, to, I'm kidding. It does sometimes feel a little good to say, I told you so. But I also recognize that our public schools are suffering because folks couldn't heed good advice or listen to what was happening in other states. So I think this conversation around school vouchers is also something to like draw that through line for a lot of these other bills. A lot of the bills that we've talked about today and what we see that have been pre-filed in our legislature come from other places, and we can see the impacts of what has happened in these other states. So if you're interested in, you know, forecasting our future, look at Louisiana, Georgia, North Carolina, Florida, and whatever issue you're interested in, Arizona.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah.
They almost bankrupted the state when they went to universal vouchers. I mean, it's really easy to see where this is going.
It doesn't take a lot. I mean, just a quick search. Man.
Yes. Yeah. All good points. All things to keep an eye on. Courtney, if people are listening and they want to get involved, if people want to advocate for our rights at the state level, what can they do? Where can they go?
Yeah, I think first you should go to aclusc.org. There's a volunteer form there that you can fill out because we have a lot for you to do. We need you to testify. We need you to come to trainings. We need you to also write to your legislators. So there is so much for you to do at whatever comfort level you have. We can find something for you, whether it is posting on social, whether it's hosting a postcard party, whatever, there is something for you to do in this space. So that's where you can find us.
And one thing that I do is during the state legislative session, every Monday, I publish the State House Dispatch on our website. So you'll see it there on the homepage, but it's a rundown of what's coming that week, what meetings there are, what chances you have to speak up. And if you go actually to aclusc.org/volunteer, there's a form where you can indicate what areas of civil liberties are most important to you. And if you fill out that form, we'll send the dispatch to you in your email inbox every Monday. And also just share opportunities to show up because there will be plenty. So Courtney, thanks for taking the time. Thanks for doing what you do.
Thanks, Paul. You're a good hang, always.
Always. So Jace, I asked Courtney this question, but I'm going to ask you too, because this is something I have to answer for myself pretty often and something that people ask me. Why should I show up to speak to state lawmakers? What good does it do?
When we show up to speak to our lawmakers, we are putting on the record our opposition or support for their ideas. We are showing them that they are accountable not just to their party, not just to their donors, not just to businesses, but to real people who live in their communities. And we are asking them often to change their mind. And I know it can be really difficult to hear overwhelming testimony in opposition to a bill and then to just see lawmakers do what feels like ignore it and vote to move that bill forward. And it's a terrible feeling, and I get it. And I get that it might make some people not want to show up, because what does it matter? Lawmakers aren't the only ones listening. There are people who tune in online from all over the state and beyond, people who couldn't get off work, who couldn't find childcare, who couldn't face the stress of the state house. And we are the voice of others, people who are oppressed, and we go into those rooms where they are so often shut out. We try to open those rooms to them, but when they cannot be with us, we are there to advocate on their behalf. So even though lawmakers don't always change their minds, we show up for people who need us to be there.
I lose sight of that sometimes, but I think it is a privilege to be in that room. And I'm not a gifted orator. I could have never made it as a preacher. I'm not the most commanding presence in the room. But when I can and when it's helpful, I am going to show up. So good reminders today. Thanks for sharing what it's like in there. To our listeners, if you liked this episode, please share it with your friends. Leave us a nice review wherever you leave reviews. Just spread the word. Word of mouth is important for podcasts. Music on today's episode is by Daft Hartley.
Thank you for listening. And until next time, while I breathe, I hope. Thank you for listening to another episode of While I Breathe. As a reminder, if you would like to get involved in advocacy at the State House or anywhere in the state, you can visit aclusc.org/volunteer and fill out our volunteer form. Then we'll be in touch. There is plenty of work to go around. Thank you.